You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
At 10 a.m. this morning, the government set out new guidelines for moving forward with COVID-19. The new traffic light system has three stages and will be introduced once every district health board in the country has a 90% vaccination rate against COVID-19. New Zealand's current rates are at 86% of people with one dose or booked for one, and 78% of people with two doses or booked for one. The traffic light system will have no lockdowns, but will increase restrictions for short periods when there are particular outbreaks. Additionally, hospitality and other sectors will require vaccination certificates for entry. The guidelines are the biggest change since the alert system was first introduced at the start of the pandemic last year, so we reached out to some experts to learn more about them. We started by speaking to Professor Nikki Turner, Director of the Immunisation Advisory Centre, which works with the government. She told us what she felt the biggest changes to the guidelines were.
I think there's two things. Firstly, there's real increased funding for local communities to support them to help their people. That's a radical new change, that the government is genuinely funding local communities to find their own solutions to help people vaccinate. The second one is clearly the new guidelines will differentiate how you can behave out in public in entertainment situations and events, vaccinated differently from unvaccinated. So there now are different rules going forward, there will be different rules for managing events depending on whether people have vaccination certificates versus those who won't. So I think those are the two big differences.
And so, as you say, this is a plan going forward, and the green lights, the traffic light system will come in place once we get to a 90% vaccination rate in every district health board across the country. How far away are we from that 90%?
We're making progress. You know, we've got first dose vaccination coverage in many areas above 90% and others getting close. Two key issues: we have to get the second doses into everybody that's had the first dose, and we need to urgently look out now for groups, pockets, communities that are still low, and we've still got gaps across the country, as we're all aware, particularly some rural areas, some pockets, particularly younger people, people who may have traditionally been marginalised from health services. So now what this requires is a lot of legwork, particularly at the local level. Let's everyone allow local communities to have the resources to support their own people and not come in from the outside and tell them how to do it, but genuinely support communities to see what the multitudinous barriers are, why we can't get the last important percentage of people who have yet not managed to get their first dose in.
Right, and some of those pockets of people being unvaccinated is sort of addressed by the target to get every district health board vaccinated, rather than just the 90% being a measure of the country as a whole. Do you think, or why aren't there specific targets around Māori or young people though? Why is it just the district health board as a whole?
Well, I think the importance of not dumping everybody in together. So firstly, I'm going backwards. If we just had a national target, you often have communities that miss out. So you do need a geographically based target. But realising that not all communities are the same, and not all young people are vaccinated or unvaccinated, not all Māori are vaccinated or unvaccinated, the importance of looking community by community and supporting the local communities, but not pulling people out and blaming and shaming like this is a Māori problem, or this is a young person's problem, or this is a rural problem, but getting much more finely grained into looking in the DHBs, where within each DHB are the communities that are missing out.
You mentioned blaming and shaming there. When I was looking through the guidelines, the one thing that stuck out to me was, is there any sort of risk we might get a situation where the vast majority of district health boards across the country have hit the 90% vaccination rate, but we're still waiting on a few, and then there's a lot of external pressure on those district health boards?
Yeah, I think there is a real risk, and we've seen internationally that people can get very polarised And then medical issues turn into politics. And for New Zealand, I think we've got to recognise that we have to walk as many communities together as possible and not get angry with those that are taking longer than others. It's important that the government's recognised this and there's more real funding behind all of this. And now each DHB will be under pressure to try and respond. I think for us on the outside is to genuinely get behind and support and not blame, because there's a whole lot of different reasons why some communities have got lower coverage than others. It's very easy to throw stones on the outside and not really drill down into what is going on at those local communities. So let's try and support the DHBs and all the local community actions we can at this point. It's important for us as a community. This is not about me as an individual or you as an individual, but how we can help everybody we can walk together.
And so you mentioned polarisation and politicising medical issues, which I think sort of strikes the core of some of the anti-vax movement. Is there much info on the people who haven't been vaccinated in New Zealand? At the moment, it's around 10 to 15% of over 12s. Do we know how many of those are diehard anti-vaxxers who would never get anti-vaxxed, who would never get vaccinated, and how many are people who just haven't had the time to get round to it yet?
Yeah, it's a bit of a moving target as our coverage rates get up. And like the country will always have a few percentage of people who just don't support the science. We will carry that and continue to carry that. We've always had that with immunisation programs. But still within this 10 to 15%, there's a large group of people who with genuine local community support, when they have trust and confidence, will move. So, you know, the hardline anti-science, you know, disagreeing with the international evidence around COVID, that still remains a very small percentage. They sound loud, they can sometimes get a lot of attention, but most of the social media reports are coming from a very small group of people. They just scare others. That's the problem.
So you're not too concerned about significant backlash to this proposal? You think it's just a few percentage of New Zealand which is leading this anti-vax movement?
I think there's a difference between people who traditionally just don't trust the science, and they will stay like that, and there will be a backlash from that group of people. We're already seeing it with a huge amount of misinformation in a small circle of people. Separately from that, what we don't want to see is a backlash of people who feel they're not being listened to, that they've got genuine concerns, they've had historical problems with the health service, they might have had a vaccine reaction in the past, and they genuinely don't feel heard, or it's actually quite a hassle to get a vaccine, they don't trust the local services, they're not available, there's problems. All of those in the mix, they can make people angry if they feel like somebody's judging them for not getting vaccinated. So my plea for all of us is don't judge any individual who's not been vaccinated, but let's work really hard with the local communities to see how we can support, you know, every individual with their own stories to help them through.
For me, one of the biggest parts of this proposal that's a change is vaccine certificates and requiring people to be vaccinated to go to particular areas. Is this a big change just in New Zealand's medical history? Have we had policies as significant as this before?
This is a really big change in New Zealand's approach. Traditionally, New Zealand has done really well with immunisation coverage through education, support and service delivery, but we have had gaps. And I think that the reason you've suddenly got this change is because we've got COVID disease breathing down our necks. So it is a big shift for the New Zealand headspace. Personally, I prefer education, support, working with communities and resourcing them hugely to the sticks. But if you can walk them both together and we can give people enough latitude to think about it, work through it, walk with every individual, then maybe we can manage this. But it's certainly a huge shift.
For the past couple of months, it's felt a little bit like New Zealand's and, well, particularly Auckland has lost our sort of world-leading status in COVID-19, especially looking at the rest of the world who have sort of opened up. If this policy works, is this going to put us back sort of as one of the most successful countries in the fight, I guess, against coronavirus?
Yes, New Zealand can still lead the way. We didn't have a chance, once the arrival of the Delta variant, we didn't really have a chance to keep COVID out of coming into the community. If we can continue on the path we're on and get really high immunisation coverage for our community, the majority of our community, then we will have low amounts of disease in our country, and overall we will still continue to be a really good leading edge country on managing COVID. So it is different from a year ago when we managed to keep COVID out of the community. We are no longer able to do that. What New Zealand can, and I believe will do and have got a good chance of doing, is that with high immunisation coverage across all our communities, when COVID does come in, the impact will be a lot less than on most other countries in the world. And that's what people will look to New Zealand and say, how did they do it?
That was Professor Nikki Turner, Director of the Immunisation Advisory Centre, on the latest COVID-19 guidelines. We also wanted to find out whether or not these rules were any good, so we spoke to Professor Michael Plank, an expert in epidemiological models from the University of Canterbury. We discussed what he thought about the rules, what else he would like to see introduced, and whether he was hopeful they would help New Zealand. He started by telling me his immediate reaction to the announcement.
I'm pleased the government's committed to getting 90% of people fully vaccinated in each DHB. You know, if we can reach that target, that will make New Zealand one of the most highly vaccinated countries in the world, and that will put us in a really strong position to be able to manage the effects of having COVID-19 in the community.
One of the points from the announcement that has already been noted as a potential area for concern is the fact that there is not a specific vaccination goal for Maori, who currently tend to have lower vaccination rates compared to the rest of the country. Is this a cause for concern for you?
Yes, this is a cause for concern. I completely agree that we need to look at Maori vaccination rates, and we need to do a lot more to get those up to the same level as the rest of the population, and to get Maori up to 90% fully vaccinated as well. So I'm pleased there are more resources being put to that as part of the announcement today, and it's clear that more work does need to be done in that area.
Were you surprised there wasn't a specific target around there? Do you have any idea why they may have chosen to not go for that?
I don't know. I'm not sure why they haven't set a specific target for Māori, but I think, you know, the target should be to get Māori up to 90% as well.
And you mentioned before this puts New Zealand in a pretty good standing number-wise compared to the rest of the world. Have other countries gone for this approach, which requires decent vaccination rates in a number of areas?
I don't know about the areas, but if you look at Australia, they have a national plan where they've started to open up at 70% fully vaccinated. Opening up further with 80% fully vaccinated. So I think it's good New Zealand's going for higher levels than that. We see in Victoria at the moment, there are a lot of people in hospital and a lot of people in ICU. And if that happened here, that would put, incredible strain on our healthcare system. So I think it's good we are going for a more ambitious target.
Was there anything else from the announcement that you would have liked to have seen, but you haven't? Any particularly big things that you think would go a long way in protecting New Zealand against COVID-19?
I mean, I think the traffic light system is good. I think it makes heavy use of vaccine certificates, and I think that's a good thing to incentivize businesses to start using vaccine certificates and to provide a very strong carrot for people that they need to get vaccinated if they want to be able to enjoy, those sorts of freedoms. One thing that may be missing is I'm not sure that the red level would be enough to control an outbreak. If, you know, for example, we had a rapidly growing outbreak in a vulnerable part of the population, for example. So there may need to be other restrictions and measures that are brought in response to local situations like that. And so hopefully that framework is a sort of a guideline, and it sets out what people can expect, but we may need to adapt that and bring other measures in depending how things develop.
And you talk about those vaccine certificates and incentives. Is there any sort of concern around almost creating two classes of people, the fact that unvaccinated people are going to be prohibited from a lot of society now? Is that just a necessary part of protecting New Zealand?
Yeah, I think it is necessary. I mean, there is a bit of a balancing act to be done here. I mean, we agree that it is people's choice, and they can make that choice not to be vaccinated. And you know, I don't think you could, for example, deny people the basic rights like being able to go to the supermarket for food or to being able to access healthcare treatment. So those sorts of basic rights do need to be respected, I think. But I think the balance is about right. To say that, well, if you're not vaccinated, you're not going to be able to go and enjoy restaurants and gatherings and crowds, because you are then putting other people at risk in that sort of situation.
Although New Zealand's specific guidelines that have just been laid out are unique to New Zealand, a lot of parts of the measures have been introduced or brought in overseas a few months ago even, and other individuals or groups within New Zealand have been calling for this sort of thing for a while, such as a specific target to get out of lockdown. Do you think the government has acted fast enough over the past couple of months or past year in getting to this system of living with COVID?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, they've set out this 90% target today, but we've still got a long way to go to get there. So I think it's good people have got something that we can collectively aim for now, and everyone who gets their vaccine is taking us one step further towards that 90%. I mean, could they have made this announcement a bit earlier? Sure, but you know, I'm not sure that would have made a material difference to sort of where we are in terms of managing this outbreak.
You said before we still have a long way to go. Overall, are you confident we are going to end up living in a New Zealand that sort of deals with COVID and isn't seeing horrific rates of infections or deaths?
Yeah, I think this puts us in a strong, you know, in the strongest possible position to do that. I mean, we are going to continue to have COVID in the community, and unfortunately, it will continue to cause hospitalizations and deaths. But I think this framework will, if we can get to the 90%, that will put us in a strong position to be able to minimize those consequences and to be able to do that with public health measures that are not disruptive, like lockdowns.
That was Professor Michael Plank from the University of Canterbury.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.